Thank you for choosing to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. In a myriad and plethora of other podcast conversations you could be choosing, we are really grateful that you chose to click on our link. And why should you choose to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast? Well, not least because we have honest, open, insightful conversations with leaders from across the recruitment industry and beyond. We often invite people on who are leaders and experts in markets and sectors that we believe we can all truly learn from. Just a word of thanks to our sponsor, Pager, and to our proud partners, Needy and Inclusion Crowd, and a warm welcome to our new partner, Keybridge IT. More about all of those later on in the show. So without further ado, let's get to know this week's guest. You are in for an absolute treat if you've clicked on the episode this week. I am so excited for you to get to know Justin Maguire, who is the founder of MCG Talent. He has come from a flourishing career within the media and digital agency world and moved into the recruitment sector, having not been able to find a specialist in his niche. He then moved over to Dubai and has built an international business. And we're going to talk today on this episode about how he's accomplished that, what his advice is to leaders who are thinking of moving into new global markets, how we can stop the rubberneck of introducing new talent into our industry by actually looking within our own industry and bringing people through who are from the sector, and his view and insights into how to create a really inclusive culture, one that allows people to be their true selves. And it's a really incredible business and it's a really great conversation, and you're going to love Justin. He's got such high energy and I can't wait for you to get to know him. So without further ado, let's jump into the episode. We are so proud at the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast to be sponsored by Pager. Pager helps recruiters to build personal brands, to identify new business opportunities, to attract those hard to find candidates, and to basically have better conversations. Now, you will have a large network that you want to build credibility with on LinkedIn, and sometimes posting content every day feels impossible. Now, that changes once you have Pager. Pager provides you with the ideas, the content, and the scheduling capability to produce daily content to build out your own personal brand in minutes, and for business development too. Pager identifies companies that are advertising jobs, have key hiring indicators such as funding rounds, mergers, acquisitions, or senior appointments, and then alerts you to this daily. Pager also enables you to write candidate-centric job adverts without bias in seconds. So once you advertise your job, Pager will then automatically create a branded post and publish it to LinkedIn without you even having to lift a finger. So when you want to actively source candidates, you can create complex Boolean strings in seconds. All you need to do is to provide the job title and location. Now, Pager is making thousands and thousands of recruiters smarter and faster. For more information, click on the link pager.co to book your demo, and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when inquiring. Now, back to the episode. This is Leisha Holmes and I'm your host on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. And I'm always a little bit excited when we go international and we invite somebody from across the waters, but he's actually based originally from the UK. So it's always nice to hear a global story. And it's somebody that I've personally been recommended to speak to by another podcast host. So that's always nice too. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Justin Maguire, who is the co-founder of MCG Talent, to the pod. Welcome to you today, Justin. How are you?
Hello, Leisha. Yes, I'm very well. Thank you. How are you?
I am very well. It's been lovely to get to know you before we press record. And, you know, so there'll be lots of people listening thinking, oh, gosh, this sounds like a very interesting journey. So tell us about who you are, your little journey to where you are today, and then we're going to obviously expand on that further, and a bit about MCG Talent as well, please.
Sure. OK, all right. My career started in the UK. I first of all was in a communications and advertising business. So I did brand-funded programming. For those people that don't know what that is, I basically work with brands to get them on air, but in a way that doesn't sound like advertising. So it was a very, we called it below the line communications, which was great, very creative. And then from that, I was in, it was this thing called digital came bumbling along, you see. And then in 2006, when I was wondering what to do with my life, whether I would stay in agency or go to another job, I decided to actually go to another country. I went to Honduras and taught kids English. So I had a complete break from communication. So I lived in Latin America and came back looking for a job in communications and realized that with my experience, I couldn't find a recruiter that understood what the heck brand-funded programming was, why I went to Latin America for a year, and what I wanted to do next. So I got sent to like newspaper interviews and all sorts of weird stuff that I wasn't interested in. So I decided that rather than rely on recruiters, I would be the recruiter.
Love it.
Yeah, but the only recruiters I knew then were people that were kind of worked in banking. I thought all recruitment was in banking then, or these crappy ones that sent me off to rubbish interviews. So
right.
Thinking ones that I thought were good, and I ended up working at this place, which was incredibly impressive. It was opposite the Bank of England. It was a business called Carrington Fox. Wonderful thing. They got acquired, I think. Anyway, you walked into their office. There was a knight in shining armor, and then they agreed to back me, and I ended up running a media, marketing, and digital division in the midst of their investment banking recruitment business.
Wow. Love
and, and yeah, it actually went very well, and. So well, in fact, that when the 2008 crash happened and they got smacked, my business was pretty resilient.
Wow.
So, and they wanted to then get involved in it in a way that they were quite sort of detached from it before, and that wasn't really right for me. So I left.
They saw that you were the cash cow and they wanted a bit of the milk and the cream.
Exactly. Mm. And they were sort of just hanging around me, and it was it's not what I wanted. And and I also did, truth be told, I didn't feel like London was the place to be then. You know, you had Lehman Brothers collapsing.
You did. Yeah, it was a terrible time.
Terrible. And lots of people leaving their jobs in London. Mm. So I got offered this job in Dubai. I was told it's the forever of the land of forever moving cranes. got in a plane, came out to Dubai. And it was like the pause button got hit the minute the wheels touched the ground. Unfortunately, the recession arrived in Dubai with a bang. The job never really worked out. But I think all good things happen for a reason. And for me, that that opportunity to be in Dubai, the opportunity to be here a long time before Dubai got trendy like it is now.
Yeah.
Gave me the opportunity to see what was going on here. And essentially, I stuck it out. Even though the job I came out to do was a bit rubbish, if I'm honest with you, I stayed long enough to see Dubai recover quite quickly.
Yep.
And then I decided to go for it and wrap up and start my own business in Dubai, servicing the media, communications, and digital world for the Middle East. So I reskinned the business I left in London.
Love it.
And that is what has been the foundation of who we are now. So since then, we've opened up in Dubai, Riyadh, Hong Kong, and Singapore. The business I opened after Dubai was Hong Kong. Then we did Singapore. Most recently, we've done Riyadh. And we have an offshore team in Philippines and Sri Lanka.
Phenomenal. You need to get over to the UK market, I think, Justin. That's what's missing.
I've tried it before and it didn't go very well, but we can go into that. Yeah.
I was going to say, we'll do that off camera, I think. I absolutely love your story. And what I like is your the humility and the vulnerability in some of the story that you've shared with us. And I like the fact that you've, you know, I guess shared, you know, and given that context, because there'll be a lot of people listening that know we're in a recession in 2024, but haven't got a clue what the recession actually meant in 2008, 2009. It was catastrophic and it went on for far longer than this one will be. I mean, by the time we share this episode, we might even officially be out of it if Bank of England announced that we're back in GDP growth mode. I guess it depends where you sit in the globe when you're listening to this. But I think I'm always very mindful of when people refer to the recession of 2008, 2009, because I think for any business to have flourished, or for people to have sort of flourished in their careers during or after that period, I don't think you can put any price on that. That's when I earned my reputation in that market. And, you know, it was very challenging. We didn't have, as an industry, I don't think the recruitment industry, we didn't have things like LinkedIn to, you know, share stories, share vulnerability, create communities, create collaboration. So I'm really grateful for you sharing that with us. And I love the why of why you set up. And I know you know, MCG is a sort of second version, or sort of point two of your own business. But I love that that's why you did it. And actually, that's why I set up my business, you know. I set up Key Recruitment because I felt nobody was servicing recruiters by putting the recruiter at the front of the job search. And so I love the why, because nobody really understood what you do. So in terms of your market, media and digital market, obviously that's, you know, transformed significantly. And certainly as we record this now in 2024, I imagine there's a lot of things that are sort of shifting parts. But I just want to concentrate, I think, for now on the global aspect of how you've managed to penetrate and successfully grow across different regions, because there are we get a lot of leaders listening as well. And, you know, you're doing this, I guess, with remote and a remote access, I guess, with all the different teams. So how have you created a structure and a scalable operation across different regions? How, like, what's been your method and your sort of mode of doing that?
It's been successful and it's been not successful in different periods of time. But you,
you learn.
Yeah, you do. And that's how you get to where you are now. But before I mention that, actually, you touched on something there about it being a recession right now in the UK and things being really tough. And, you know, I've worked through, you might not even be aware of this, but in the Middle East, we had the oil price crash in 2016.
Yeah.
15, 16, where the price of oil went from $120 down to like 20. When you're in a region where everything's reliant on oil, that was devastating. Okay, let me just be very clear. That was worse. I actually think, looking back, that was worse than COVID for us in the way that because it hit out of nowhere, right? At least with COVID, you knew what was coming. That was wallop. And I was still very early on in my business career, and I didn't really know how to deal with it. So that was very painful. But what I've learned in downturns over time is there's always someone hiring. Now, it's a lot harder to get to them. And you do have to kiss a lot of frogs. No denying it, right?
Yeah.
But there is always some, and most businesses really, and I'm talking about businesses that are, I'm talking about big multi, because we're talking about Michael Pages or 100, 300 people. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about your 100, under 100 businesses. Normally, if you look at them, there's some key clients there. You've got about five or six spying clients, right?
Yeah.
You can find them in a recession.
Of course you can.
And you can lose them in a good market as well, right?
Yeah.
So your year is always determined by how close you keep on to those really good clients that you've got. And I'll just leave that as well, because that's one thing I've learned in from downturns and from good times, is if you've got a good spine, you can get through any market.
I agree.
Right. Now, where we are now is, and how we got to where we are now really is... I built the business here. Originally, it was a 360 business. So it was me on my own. And then I brought my first person in 2012. Now, that person was my mum's best friend's son. So
okay.
Very thorough interview process. But I think that's what you do in those days, isn't it? You kind of you scrap around for whatever you can get. And also, no one wanted to move to Dubai. I couldn't find any recruiters in Dubai. So, you know, you had to beg, borrow and steal. My third employee was a guy called Francisco, bless him. He's in Portugal now. I interviewed him and I spoke so much, I didn't even realize he didn't speak English till the end of it.
Come and work for me.
Yeah.
For all the leaders listening.
Well, the genius of that story is that I only realized when I went at the end, I went, and you understand what I'm saying? And he was sort of went, when do I start? You know, that I thought, oh my God, you know,
oh
I don't know what I said. But the deal was he had to learn English in 3 months. And he did. Not only that, I clocked very early on that in creative recruitment, you need to understand what a portfolio looks like. Now, he was an incredibly creative guy. And I got extraordinarily lucky that I struck gold with him. He knew what great work looked like.
Wow.
And at the time when Dubai was, all our clients that we were going to see in Dubai, they were saying, look, we want these great, there's these amazing creatives coming out of Latin America right now. Do you think you can get hold of them for us? And I thought, wow, they all speak in Brazil. So talk about luck.
Of course. Look, that was definitely fortuitous, Justin. Absolutely. That was not by design, was it?
Absolutely. Well, there you go. And then the three amigos, we did year one together. And then I've got an operations person in, and we grew out by a sector specialist. So we had marketing, communications, media, creative, digital. And we scaled and up to about 2016, there was about 18, 20 of us. And then I interviewed Adam, who's my now business partner in the UK, and said, do you fancy, I was thinking about opening up in London or Hong Kong, do you fancy opening up one of these offices for me? And he was completely up for Hong Kong. The reason I wanted to do Asia was because when we were looking for expats to move out of the UK, everyone was always going, you know what, I think I want to go to Hong Kong, Singapore or Dubai. So I thought, right, if you can't beat them, join them. So join that was them. My thinking. And I thought, if you can understand the intricacies of a market like the Middle East, where you've got all these, you're a hub for a region, surely you can do that in Asia. Mm. And that's, that, you know, and it did actually work very, very well. That blueprint moved over there. And then 40% of our revenue in Hong Kong was coming out of Singapore. So it made sense to get a license there. And now today in Dubai, most of our revenue is coming out of Saudi, believe it or not, but even though we're based in Dubai. And so I decided to get a license there. Now, what's happened from a structural element in that time is we started off as a 360 business and we are now a layered business. So we have an account management team. We have a new business team. I have, unsurprisingly, given my background, invested quite a lot into a marketing team. So we have four people in that. And we decided to put all delivery offshore into Singapore, Sri Lanka and
Philippines.
And that's how we are.
I love it. And you know, I mentioned to you off camera that I went to the Recruitment Expo in London this week in March as we record this now. And the layered approach is certainly one that I think a lot of the most vocal oracles in the recruitment industry, who, you know, people like Neil Carberry and Greg Savage, you know, that they are recommending that rather than people just being fixated on the 360 model. So I really like your journey and your expression of that, because I think so many people listening will be sat in a 360 role, not necessarily enjoying one element of it. And I think that that proves you do not need to be sat in a box. And as a leader, you don't need to necessarily have people labeled in certain areas. I think you can do that. I love how you sort of expressed that, you know, the journey that you went on as well. And, you know, you clearly got lucky with Francisco. I love that. I think lesson learned, maybe when you're interviewing people, definitely get to know them and get them to talk first. But I think it's a lot of the time things are luck in business, aren't they? You get lucky.
Absolutely. And now, you know, I can look back at some of the highest. What's the good things that have happened in our business? We've hired some great people. My business partner, I didn't even know him. He's now my business partner. He runs our agency, right? But what's some of the really tough things that have happened over time? It's been people related as well, right?
Of course.
Sometimes you get lucky, sometimes you don't. And I think some of the painful lessons that I've learned is, and partly why I've changed structure from a 360 into a layered approach, is that most of the people that I employed in Dubai, for example, they're from here. So if you wanted it, you actually get to feel it really intensely when you're in a market like this. Because if I'm moving people over from the UK or from Portugal or from other places and they're coming to work for us, I can only control what happens within work, right?
But absolutely.
If it happens outside of work, if they're not happy in Dubai, if things happen to them, they might want to leave, and that's got nothing to do with our company. You know, they could do something stupid at the weekend, and they could get asked to leave the country. All these things are outside of my control, right?
Yeah.
And I've lost a lot of people over time to that. And in the old 360 model, I would lose a book of business, but I would lose a lot of that. Right?
Oh, I'm emphatic about this point. And when my clients come and ask me, because obviously I give a lot of counsel and a lot of guidance to my partners in business who will say, look, you know, we're a bit concerned. I think the benefit of a 360 model is that you become that entire, you know, the whole industry, you know your clients, you know your contacts, you can move quicker. In theory, you can become a much higher biller. But I think the risk is so great to business leaders listening, because you've just said, it's all the intellectual property that person takes with you. And look, you know, in life, we all know that things that are out of our control, there's literally nothing you can do about it. You can try and prevent, you can create support networks, you can have, you know, second plans, you know, fallback plans, etc. But the reality is we're in our business, it's human capital, we're dealing with human beings, and things happen, shit happens, that's the truth. So I really like that approach, and I think it's a very honest answer, Justin, to be honest with you.
I think also, Liz, a good way of testing this is if you ask your team, why is it that people enjoy working with us, right? And if they immediately can only reference themselves, then you have a problem, okay? Now, I'm a company, I believe that your brand, your business, who you stand for, what you do, what your expertise, why people, what your values are, those things are what your customers and your candidates should be thinking about. And in the old model, everyone just thinks it's about them, and they don't sell, or they sell on them. They don't sell on the brand, the business.
Yeah.
And the layered that approach enables you to do as a business and as a, and as, and as an employee is think about what the business that you're doing, what that machine, what that can bring to the table is, because it's not just about the individual, because what the customer wants to know is what happens if you're not there. You know, they want to know, they want to know that they're in safe hands with your business. That's what the layered approach does. I think it makes it
I agree.
I think it's a much better model for everyone.
I agree with you, and I think, you know, and I want to cover this next, is that because of the fact that you came from the industry that you represent, and, you know, you had the insight, you're thinking as a marketer rather than as a recruiter, you know, you think about things from a service perspective. It's a solution selling perspective rather than I'm your recruiter and I'm just going to solve your problem for you. So I think it's, that will really resonate with a lot of people listening. And I personally think that's what's been so wrong with the transactional growth of our industry, the boom since, particularly since the recession, you know, of recruitment companies that just think that that's what they can do. And I don't agree with it. I think what you've said there for me is the benchmark of how good recruitment should be done, which is that we are providing a solution, a service, and we should be seen as a professional service. And if you are doing that, then it's not just that one person. So I think I agree with you. So you obviously came from the industry, and I think one of the other narratives that I'm seeing an awful lot of is because we've got a bit of a bottleneck, certainly since COVID, of the right people being brought into our industry, the right profiles of people. I've always thought that there's a real benefit and advantage to hiring in new recruiters who come from their industry because they have a knowledge, they have a potential network. What are your thoughts on that? And are there any sort of downsides to potentially looking down that avenue? Not necessarily just with Marcoms, but within finance, within actuarial, within legal, tech, etc.
Look, I have a mantra that I hire attitude, I train skill. Okay.
Now,
obviously, that works to a certain level, right?
Mm.
But if I look at the success, well, I've told you about two success stories I had, actually.
Yeah.
But when I look at some of the, see, I always have to think about when I hire people out into Dubai or Hong Kong, Singapore, or Saudi, another game, by the way, which is, you can't just drop an expat into Saudi. They would sink straight away. I have to think about how they would fit culturally. I have to think how they would fit business model. So actually hiring from industry for us it works brilliantly, because number one, it just gives your client, as a client, they get this immense sense of credibility from the person.
I think so.
And honestly, it's how I managed to roll up very quickly. And you know, if you look at it on paper, I didn't have a lot of recruitment experience, but I understood the recruitment nuts and bolts from the time I had in the UK. And the minute we're in the business of solving problems, right? And the minute I could sit in front of a customer and say, I understand the person that you're looking for and the problem you're trying, that they would be there to fix, they get this immense calmness and peace of mind, because I've sat in their shoes, because I know what the problem is and I know the type of person that will fix it. And that's all they want to hear. They want to hear you do that, and they want to hear you come back quickly. All right.
Yeah, I agree. It's that level of empathy, isn't it? And it's knowledge. I think that in my experience, I've only ever seen it where it's not worked. And that was, I'm turning the clock back 25 years when I did engineering recruitment. And I'd only been doing the job for 2 years, but I was top biller. And so anybody that either came into the team, I was a bit of a, you know, arm around them, bit of a buddy scheme, which I totally get now as a manager. I can see that that's a really great way to sort of champion people. And she was an engineering manager, that she came from the sector, and she was dreadful. She was awful. And, you know, she'd gone through her early training in the company, and she just sat there and asked closed questions, was very assumptive in all the interviews. And I remember pulling her to one side saying, oh, I mean, I wasn't managing her. Saying, look, if you keep making assumptions about these people, you're not going to actually understand what they do. You need to almost park it. And I think because she thought she knew better than them. So I go back to what you said at the start of this part of the conversation. I think that's an attitude thing. I think she just thought she knew best. But I see it so many times where, you know, I've placed ex-lawyers who've become top billing legal recruiters because they know the job. They've got the credibility. They've got the kudos. Yeah. And I do think it comes down to empathy. You know your industry really well. So I think my my personal insight into this for anyone listening who's struggling or finding it challenging to bring new talent in, think about your own market. Think about people who've got transferable skills, who want to do the job, who you think would be great for the solution that you're trying to sell.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of the people that look, ultimately, I think you need to be a great salesperson as well. And if you've got a natural way about you, if you've got, if you are someone that lights up a room, and you can always tell those people quite quickly, I immediately zone in on those people because they've got that thing about them that people are going to just buy into straight away.
Yeah, I agree.
Then that person can be a fabulous recruiter. And if they can read the room, you've got to be able to read the room. You can have all the skills, but if you haven't got Scooby-Doo, what the room's saying, then you're also going to not going to do too well in this.
We don't talk about intuition enough, I don't think, because I don't think that's something that you can train. I don't think you can. And I think what you've just said there, I think people are attracted to similar types of people, but then you've got to think about things like diversity. And I don't think we're talking about that. I think what we're saying is that you are magnetized toward people that you would trust, because I think, that's who you're going to put your career in the hands of, isn't it? Somebody you trust, or your next hire is somebody that you think is passionate and enthusiastic and knowledgeable and all of those things. And I think very often somebody who's naturally curious and has intuition is probably better than somebody who maybe is saying all the right things. I think it's all these nuances, isn't it, with human behavior.
Yeah, I agree.
So your industry must be, everyone's talking about AI and the Meta effect. What is the impact, as we record this now in 2024, of where you've seen it? AI is just traveling at the speed of sound, isn't it? In terms of even a year ago, who was talking about ChatGPT? Where is it impacting your industry? And then in terms of you integrating it into your business, and then what do you see over the next 12 months?
Yeah, so let's talk about, I'll break that down then. First part, so where I see it impacting the communications media marketing world. Honestly, I see there's a lot of talk, there's not a lot of change right now, okay? which is quite interesting, right?
Yeah.
I think if you look at design, creative, I think that people are saying we're on the tip of something, the industry being completely shaken up. But then again, with the roles we're getting briefed on are the same as they were 2 years ago. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So we're all talk, but we're not actually doing anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk and not a lot of action. Here's what I think is going to happen this year. I think we're inevitably going to see jobs coming in. I think first phase, we're going to see jobs coming in. And those jobs that come in are, let's find someone who knows how to use this bloody stuff, because I don't think a lot of people know actually how to use it, right?
Yeah,
and I'm even talking about creative. Everyone's still trial and error. So that's going to come in first. And I think inevitably post that, you're going to see a change in the types of jobs we're going to get. But in any mix up, in any revolution, if there is that you're always going to go through a period where jobs are going to be created and jobs are going to be lost. And I think it'll balance itself out. The creative industry and communications industry, no doubt, is going to be disrupted. I mean, you've got, you can produce a press release like that. So PR agencies, of course, can be disrupted. But then again, PR agencies can be three times more efficient now. So
absolutely.
Who's to say that they're going to all be put out for work? I think this doomsaying, this, hey, everything's going to change, they're all gone, everyone's going to be a machine, rubbish. That ain't happening. No. I think people are going to, the good will rise to the top as per normal, and the bad ones, the ones that don't adapt, will fall off, but there'll be so much coming in that I don't think it's going to change that much.
Yeah, so, it's just, I think it's humans using AI rather than the AI itself. I think that's the calm way that I would say that, and I'm somebody who is not the easiest tech adopter. That's partly because of my demographic. I'm almost 50, and I just don't have a technical brain. That's the reality. I've got a much more creative, fluid brain. But I see, if you think about anything that you're doing in life, you are using some sort of automation, and it's about making our lives easier. It's not to replace the human interaction. And I think that's where, a lot of leaders are a bit worried, but it's about integrating it into your business to make yourself more efficient. It's as simple as that, and seeing the opportunities. So I like that you're setting your stall out. I think it's actually probably the realest answer I've had.
Yeah. Well, look, and also, I don't know if you're aware of this, but my wife sold an HR tech business to Access Group, which has just been integrated with Volcanic. So she built a DE&I AI piece of technology with her business partner, Hayley. Now, that took the bias out of hiring. It was an incredible piece of tech.
Amazing.
Incredibly hard to put together, right? And that's now been integrated, but it's taking quite some time to get people even to adapt and change and move forward. So the technology's there. It's just getting people in to use that technology.
Using it.
I think what's going to take some time. From us and our business, how we operate. Now, I am a believer of, as having been the husband of someone who's watched someone build, scale, and sell a tech company. Yep. Helen did with 12 people remote, having never been in the same room. I don't even think the team ever really got together in the same room.
Wow. That's amazing.
So, I mean, their Christmas parties weren't as much fun as ours, but they sell for a lot more money, right?
Cheers! So,
yeah. but it was fascinating to watch. And actually, in part of watching that, and I was a founder investor in that business as well, I got really to look at how the inner workings of a technology company works. And I wanted to apply a lot of that methodology to our recruitment business.
I like this. Great. Okay.
What I decided to do last year, which was perhaps a little bit bold, but I decided to trim our business, not because we needed to, but because I felt that I could, if I focused on process and tools, yep. I could make good people more successful.
Yeah.
And if I used the systems correctly, then we as a business could grow with fewer people. And my goal has to been to grow our revenue and our profitability. In fact, our profitability number one, with as little people as possible.
Yeah. Right?
As few people as possible, not little people. that would be funny.
The Munchkins have arrived. Yeah. That's not very DEI. Helen wouldn't be happy. No, I knew exactly what you meant.
You know what I mean. You know what I mean.
Please, can the woke committee just sit tight for a minute?
So that's, you know, and that's what we've done today. So the way our business works, and the reason I've got a heavily investment into marketing is that we have, at its base point, we have a lead gen. We do that offshore. We have a guy in Bangladesh, scrapes our
Amazing.
Market. Those are the
Amazing.
Job titles that we look to hire on. Looks across the Middle East and Asia, takes all the information. We then plug that into our system. We then market to that person, okay? And we have basically a suite of products that targets our potential customers.
Yep.
Now, it's actually quite often, it's a drip campaign, if you want to call it
okay.
that.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
The sixth and eighth interaction with them, will we eventually get a response? And that could, you know, and that could be we're not hiring. It could be we are hiring. It could be we're hiring down the track. Goes into our system. They then continue to get marketed to. We then have two event people that we put on events, put on webinars, put in-person events. And they are then taking that information from the people we're emailing. So we're creating the events. We're constantly creating this flow that feeds into our team. Now, that is how we develop our best relationships with customers. That is our strategic business strategy. Our tactical new business strategy is with our existing customers. We're talking to them about great talent. We're sharing, you know, we're doing all the things that you normally do. Mm. Specking people. We're talking, you know, we're saying, hey, have you thought about this person?
Yeah, yeah.
So yep. We've got those two things going on at any given time. We then got the offshore team speaking to candidates all the time, making sure they're fine, making sure they're updated, and that's plugging into the system. So that you've got delivery people that look up, make sure the candidates are looked after and our database is clean.
Yeah.
Client team that makes sure our clients are serviced to and they're delivered with apex client care. And a marketing and business development team that's constantly bringing in the fresh leads through the table. So I'm doing that with fewer people, right?
And then new recruiters are just recruiting. They're not having to do all of those things.
Yeah, yeah. And you've systemized.
Light bulb moment. You've systemized it. It's all automated, presumably.
Yeah.
And it's all recorded on your ATS. Like you say, it's all there as the intellectual property that you need to populate. But the recruiters can then still go and do their job. I think it's perfect. And I think that that more business owners should talk about the profitability being the most important thing. Profitability in people. It's not about how many people. It's about the right people in your business. And it's about giving them the right structure to be able to just do their job properly, which you've done.
You and I know that a lot of recruitment business owners are driven by ego rather than
profitability. Yeah, yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
Even I went to an event not that long ago. The first person, this recruitment business owner, said, "Hi, how you doing?" Yeah, he said, "How many people have you got?" I thought, what bizarre question, you know? I was like, well, actually, I've taken our business from 40 down to 20 people, and we do the same revenue, and I'm really happy with that. He's like, All right. You know, I don't think he'd had that response before, right?
No, it's I do actually think, I mean, and obviously I'm a huge ambassador and advocate for our industry, but I think one of the most poisonous elements of our industry is this whole cock swinging competition about size. Because let's be honest, ladies, let's shout it louder, size doesn't matter. And it really doesn't. I think profitability in people, and I think, I mean, I'm a perfect example. There's three of us, but I know for a fact that, you know, you have to go on Companies House, that our NFI is far greater than companies that've got 20 or 30 staff. It's not about the size, it's about the people that you have, and it's about the reputation, it's about where you're positioned in the market. It's all of those things. So I love that that was your answer. What did he respond? Did you ask him back or her?
I wish I didn't bloody say it now, because I opened the floodgates up for a gazillion and one questions, because, you know, I think once I let the guard down, he was, I think he felt a bit more at ease, right?
Of course. That is the truth. I have that all, you can imagine I have that all the time. Yeah. Usually it's when I'm saying, how are things going, you know, to somebody that I've known for a long time, how are they? Oh, yeah, it's great. And I'm like, and they'll say, how's things going? They'll say, well, actually, I've had a really, really shitty start to 2024 because we're in a recession. So funnily enough, not because I agree with what you said before, people are always hiring, but why would you move jobs right now? So I've got too much integrity to let people move unless they really, really have to. So it's obviously slowed down my revenue, which it has. I'd predicted it. I knew it would happen, and I'll be fine. I'll trade out of it. It goes in cycles. And it means those people that have said, do not move, who are they going to turn to? They're going to come to me. And I give that answer and they go, actually, we've had a really terrible Q1 as well. And I'm like, there you go. As soon as you open up with honesty and vulnerability, you are creating a much better dialogue. So I love that. That's hilarious. Well, I mean, look, this is, we could talk for days by the sounds of it. And I think I love that you referred to Helen. Actually, we must get Helen on with her incredible business that she, I did actually have a little spite at her when I was looking at your profile. Justin, how can people get in touch with you? Are you a LinkedIn proficient person? You like people to connect you over there?
Absolutely. As many of my friends tell me, they see too bloody much of me on LinkedIn. There you go.
No such thing. Don't you worry about it. Yeah, it's been really brilliant. Thank you so much for being on. Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, absolutely. Loved it. Very good fun.
It's been really good, and thank you for joining us. And for anyone who wants to get in touch with Justin, make sure you do drop him a LinkedIn connection request. I'm sure that's something he'd love to pick up with you. And all the very best, and we hope that it's a very prosperous year for you for 2024 and beyond. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We are thrilled to welcome to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast a new partner in KeyBridge IT. KeyBridge provide 24/7 support to all of their customers. Established in 2010, KeyBridge IT Solutions is a London-based, fully managed IT support and solutions provider. And for recruiters like me, we all need the IT expert to sort our problems out, whether it's with Microsoft Cloud, Microsoft 365, internet connectivity, security, Microsoft Azure. I mean, all these words actually mean nothing to me. What about you? But so much more than that. They work across many industries, not just recruitment, but if you're listening from the world of leisure or charity or finance or even marketing, they will be able to help. So click on the link in the podcast show and get to know KeyBridge IT. We are so proud to be partners of Needy, the gifting revolution. Here at Key Recruitment, we absolutely love to send out bespoke gifts to our new place candidates to welcome them in their new jobs, but also as an extra special thank you to clients or when a team is celebrating something really special. But to be honest, we were really fed up with dull or mediocre gifts that you could just buy on the high street that didn't really reflect who we are at Key Recruitment as a business. This is why we chose Needy. Needy source sustainably from the UK's best independent businesses, offering the most perfect array of bespoke gifts and experiences too. So no more boring bottles of plonk or rubbish boxes of chocolates. This is how you make your customers' day with a gift that really matters and shows that you really want to do something special for them. For more information on how psychology and AI forming to make the best gift experience for you, click on the link and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when ordering. The Recruiters Recruitment Podcast is thrilled to be partnering with Inclusion Crowd. Inclusion crowd put the D into diversity, but do it disruptively. We love that. Really reflecting what we're about. I was introduced to Inclusion Crowd back in 2020, and I've been absolutely blown away with what they're doing to totally transform the recruitment and hiring sector. They believe at Inclusion Crowd that companies should be reflective of society, and that no matter who you are listening now, you have a story to tell. You have a contribution to make. An Inclusion Crowd educates you in allowing your voice to come out and share that story, but doing it in a way that educates your colleagues and your customers equally. Inclusion Crowd, like the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast, has clients all over the world, and they specialize in our industry. What we all want to do together is to maintain best practice and to raise industry standards to enable us to attract and retain the best talent, but doing so inclusively and with true diversity. By doing this, by accomplishing a true EDI policy within your business, you will also retain the top talent as well as attract new talent, which is a win-win for everybody listening, making more profitable business and a much better industry, highly regarded. Inclusion Crowd are also the official awarding body for the Inclusion and Diversity Certification Mark within recruitment. We are so proud to be assisting and partnering Inclusion Crowd. If you want to know more information, please click on the link in this episode and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when you do so. Now, back to the episode.